Finally, I had a mail from one of our listeners that I wanted to review, and because I found it quite interesting. He disagreed with me on the number of issues, and guess what? After reading the mail, I now agreed with him on certain issues. So I was going to review that to encourage other people to write in, you know, or contact us on things that you like or don't like and stuff like that, so the conversation can continue. Remember, nobody knows everything. Some of the things that you think you know, self, sometimes you don't know. Even Google, if you Google Disu now, I Googled Disu one time, they said, oh, Disu is one something, something, something in Uzbekistan. I said, no. Anyway, but I'd been worrying this gentleman in the studio here. Yeah, he lives in Abuja. He's my good old paddy man. You know when you say somebody is your paddy man? EKD Ziguzo. We are paths crossed initially in the Vanguard. Right?
Yes,
Vanguard. When he was in charge of sports then, way back then with Chris Okojie. I'm talking 80s now. And so I haven't really had, but we meet on social media once in a while. So when I heard he was in Lagos, I said, I need to bring Ikedi here. Let's just have a chit chat. He's also a columnist now on Business Day. And he does me the honor of sending his column every week, which I also publish on jimmydisu.com. So if you want to see some of his writings. So I'm going to sit back and have a chat with EKD, which we started since, as I got to the office at 7, he was already here. This is old school. This is old school. The program is 9. I remember last Friday I had one young lady here who, you know, wanted to highlight and showed up at about 9:45. So I said, what should I do? Should I rewind the time? Or we should go back in time? Ikedi was here, not surprisingly. So I asked him, Ikedi, the night bus you enter? He started laughing. No, he'd been in Lagos for a while. Ikedi, how are you?
I'm very fine, thanks. And good morning, listeners.
Yes, listeners, yes. Where do we start from? Because you and I have come such a long way. But I think the best place I will start the discussion from is the state of the nation. And you've been writing regular columns, you know, about the state of the nation. But in general terms, are you happy where we are at the moment?
I'm not happy you're asking me that question.
I know.
Because really nobody should be happy.
Yeah.
Even those who we think benefit from the state of the nation, I don't think they're happy. Even if they are, they're not comfortable. They are not safe. No matter where they are. So I'm not happy. I'm concerned. And I think something can be done, or things can be done, which nobody seems to be paying attention to. And that's the one that gets me more concerned, because I'm wondering if people do not see what we ordinary people are seeing, and why they are not concerned about seeing how to change the situation.
Okay, I mean, so when I asked you that question, which of the issues raging through your mind came to the fore?
No, not security.
Security, yes.
Yeah, it's so basic that without it, you cannot do anything. You can't do anything. You can't go to the farm. You can't be on the road. You can't be in your house. You can't even be in your office, wherever you are. So security is the very basic one. And I think it gets attention, but in the wrong ways. We hear of the money spent. We hear of governors giving vehicles to security agencies. We see people armed and dressed, but that's really not the issue.
It's the results as the issue, really.
Yes, the results have to be the issue, and how those resources are also deployed will have to be the issue.
Would you say this government of President Muhammadu Buhari is complicit in creating such a chaotic environment that we have today? And if that were it, how would you hold them responsible for it? Somebody must be held responsible anyway.
He's the president.
Yes.
And when they feel like they call him executive president,
who are them?
No, people are around.
Who are they?
People around him. I mean, yes. He has people who go all out supporting him as if he's infallible.
Yeah.
And that makes it even more difficult for people to sympathize with him when he fails. They believe, no, he's this, he's that. But here are the issues. Nigeria, parts of Nigeria are shutting down. Whether you're talking of schools, whether you're talking of people not being able to go to the farms, whether you talk of the president's own home state, Katsina, where the governor has practically told people, don't go to specific places because he said the roads there are shut down. Don't go to the farms to either bring wood or even cattle to the market. You know, so you are cutting people off.
Means of livelihood,
and you are not providing alternatives. And in doing that, you are conceding those areas to these bandits. So you don't see a firm reaction to these issues. That is one. It was officially announced that the Nigeria Force lost a plane again to these bandits, you know? We didn't see any action that matched the type of anger that you raise. While we were at that, NDA was attacked.
Yes.
And just like these former attacks, I'm even restricting them, the ones that affect the military directly. You didn't see the anger or such, even if it has to be a reprisal attack, if we call it that, on the bandits. So that is that. The officer held is still held. You know, so when you look at all those type of things, you'll be wondering what is exactly going on. And the most amazing part of it is, if this issue were to come up at the National Assembly today, if a vote is taken, the vote will be that the president is doing well. So that's
the thing. Do you see a conspiracy of some sort?
It's not conspiracy. People have become so, they think loyalty means blindness. You know, so they've become so blind to the issues that support Nigeria's existence that all they're thinking of, oh, if this is where... In fact, sometimes the president might not even want to take that position, as we see. They put up a position they think that supports the president. If you are elected into office, I think your first loyalty is to those who elected you.
Yes.
So the people we have in the National Assembly, their loyalty is to Nigeria through those Nigerians who elected them. So if they decide to line behind the president, it should also be because the president's loyalty and actions support the safety, security, well-being of these Nigerians who elected him. You know, but that's not what is going on. That's what is not is going on. And I tell people, this is not about who is in power and so on. If not, Katsina should be safe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all the other states could go to bed. Katsina should be safe. But the situation in Katsina is such that at some point, only two local government areas were said to be safe out of 34. You know, so it's not, it's a situation that should not just worry people, but we should see action that matches this level of insecurity.
But why are we so heavy-footed in just like for example, in the reprisals you thought should have taken place, or even in putting in very strong actions to show that we are in control? Is it a lack of capability or a lack of will? Or is there some other thing that we haven't identified that, you know, that could be hindering this kind of expected action?
Each time I look through all those areas you've talked about and the reasons people come up with, I just see them as excuses. The most important thing should be the survival of Nigerians, the safety of Nigerians. Even the Constitution states it. It says the primary duty of government, the welfare and security of the people, is the primary duty of government. Primary. It's not secondary. So once you don't have it, you have no business even being government. So all those reasons you raise, willpower, lack of this and so on, if those are the issues, then we deal with them. Otherwise, they become excuses. And they've been going on for very long. And while we are looking for the reasons and the excuses and whatever, the bandits are not relenting. Maybe by the time we are through today, you'll find out they're taking some school children and so on. And we're looking at, you know, for how many years international agencies, government itself, have made a lot of efforts to see improvements in school enrollment in the north. Do you understand that? But now we are shutting down schools. I mean, that's like the bandits have taken over the future, and we are gladly conceding it to them. We are shutting down schools. We don't know if there will be food tomorrow because nobody is farming.
Yeah.
I mean, people will ask you, so why did you go to the farm? I mean, that type of question, that the level of risk in farming. if you manage to farm and you're getting the products, they could be taken off you from the roads or anything could happen. And I don't think any government, it doesn't have to be Buhari, any government should allow that to happen within its territory.
Well, the as far as the northern side of things is concerned, I also believe that the infiltration from other countries, okay, is what is bringing, you know, what has brought all these bandits into. Most of them are not Nigerians. Maybe one should add, or do you think otherwise?
You know why I'm laughing?
Yes,
that's a very poor explanation of what is happening. Okay. So if a foreigner decides to be a criminal, you allow him to be.
No. I'm not saying that's an excuse. Okay. I'm just saying that that's what
border,
it is.
If the borders are so open, people can come in, why haven't we shut down those borders? The borders here anyway are shut. Down here, our southern borders are shut.
No, Benin.
Particularly Benin.
Benin is not shut.
Okay, Benin was shut for so long,
yes.
And the claim was it was over smuggling.
Yes.
Now, smuggling does not pose as much security threat as what we are
as what
going
we have.
Through. So have we considered shutting down the borders?
But
have we considered deploying more people there? What have we exactly done?
No, the truth is we have no borders in the north.
No, we should then.
We should. We have no borders.
If we found out that to be, if we found that to be the situation, in 6 years we could have done something about it. We could have done something about it. I don't think any effort is being made to see this as an emergency. Something like we need to pause, do something about this, or we can't move further. You know, right? All types of people come up with reasons. Oh, our borders are porous. Our borders can't be managed. We are too many. Under ECOWAS protocol, people should come in and so on. No, that's not what the issue is. The issue is that we have not decided how to tackle this matter. And people, again, there was a time people used to think, oh, it won't be in my state. You know, it's a problem for them to deal with or whoever and so on. But it's affecting everywhere.
Yes,
you might not live in those states.
It's inching in slowly.
Yes, you might not live in those states, but you have businesses those things affect. I'll give you an example. In if you go to the main market in Onitsha, there's a place where they bring in fish from Maiduguri, from Lake Chad specifically. It's shut down for as many years as there have been trouble there, because the fish won't come. So just trace the whole chain of businesses that is all the way to the. Whether you're talking of transportation or, you know, all that. So it is not just, it won't affect my own area. And there is no guarantee. The way it is now, if these banditry, the herdsmen move here, there is grass and so on. Even if there is grass behind your house, there's a chance they can get to you soon.
It's a tough one. But if I'm going to speak to you for 1 hour, I'll have to quickly move on to other subjects because EKD's knowledge is vast and wide. And I'm still, at some point, I'll need to also to talk about sports. We are going to open up our lines very soon, 0700-993-993-993. And the very famous female line, 01465-7190. I think my glasses are better this morning. 01465-7190. I have in the studio with me EKD Ezeguzo. I think we have all become veterans now.
I'm not. Some people have practiced for longer than I have lived. I can't be answering.
It doesn't make you any less. If you've been practicing as a journalist for close to 40 years.
More.
So what are we talking about?
I started young.
You started young. Yeah, an old man, EKD. Whether you like it or not. Yeah, an old man. Epa. let's talk about the practice of journalism. Let's think back to when all of us, you know, virtually like started then, and things were done manually, and we had more. How would I put it now? We had a higher responsibility because there was no social media in those days, so the dissemination of information fell squarely on us, and I think we took it on quite well. But now it's a free for all. Do you feel any frustration practicing as a journalist with the advent of the social media?
No. What I think is, in those days, you were thinking about even ourselves. We knew less, and the audience also knew less. So whatever you offered, in fact, the audience depended on you.
On you, yeah.
Radio stations were not open till I think at 4 o'clock. TV. Radio stations will shut down at 10.
No, 12.
No, 12 was much later, 10 p.m.
No, it's 10 p.m. that they start Hammer House of Horror.
Okay. You know, so what we now find is that we have a situation where the media is on around the clock.
Around the clock, yes.
So long as you have a smartphone, you can read anything, you can do anything. So the practitioners have a tougher responsibility to get to the audiences. In most instances, the audiences are ahead of you. What you're thinking of saying, the readers have already. When the police headquarters was bombed, it was on fire in Abuja. It was passersby who sent out the initial first, pictures. By the time the main media, if I put it that way, got there, that place had been shut down. You couldn't get pictures. So it was people passing. So the media is everywhere and everybody is trying to practice. But there are still responsibilities media practitioners have to, which is to lead, provide agenda. Everybody sets agenda, but there are still mainstream agenda. Like as we're talking about now, security is a mainstream agenda. But you find out the way it's discussed in the media is unlikely to get as much attention beyond maybe pictures of bodies or people killed and so on. You know, those are the ones that excite the social media. But we have to provide the way because most main media, they also have social media platforms. So I would like to see a situation where they lead social media practice through those their platforms.
Yeah, but also now there's a credibility problem. First of all, the profession has been infiltrated. Everybody calls themselves journalists, bloggers, zimmits. And there's been a lot of fake news, deliberately or through lack of the techniques of, you know, finding out whether these are right or wrong and so on and so forth. And it's a bigger problem that we have. Our credibility is waning. I believe the practitioners by the day are getting less well-grounded and well-groomed for the job. You get a lot of that. When I see some of the writings, right from grammar to, you know, you read in the newspaper, say, somebody we spoke to a source on the basis of anonymity. You know, you find all kinds of practices that...
what has happened, really, is that the degeneration of society does not affect only one part. Teaching is bad in schools. And it's the same people who are badly taught who turn out to teach. You know, so it just keeps going on in that circle until there's improvement in general education, whether it's journalism practice, whether it's medicine,
law, and so on.
The standards will keep falling. That's one. Secondly, we also have a society that is so dynamic that people think of news only in terms of breaking news, you know, breaking news. So there is the race to beat each other in breaking news. That's where you get all this.
That's right.
People are not checking again, and they just push it out. Then the issue of fake news.
Yes.
There used to be genuine mistakes people made, you know, in publishing something, not knowing it's not correct or it's not true. But we also moved to the level that people deliberately put out something that they want to. And before you know it, is shared all over the place and so on. Some of those fake news, as it were, some even 6 months after, a year after, they are still going around the social media, even when they've been corrected. You know,
so, you know what goes on the social media stays on social media. Now, somebody, Sharif, I'd like you to please help me check. Okay. About two, three people are telling me that the Benin border is still shut. And Idiroko. I thought it was open.
I defer to you because you live down here. So
no,
unless you're a smuggler. And that's why I didn't want to accuse you of smuggling. So I just said, well, no, I don't know what you've been up to lately.
I haven't been to that side of town for quite a while. If it's shut again, it means it's not too long ago it was shut a second time because there was a time it was opened. Can somebody fact check for us, please?
Yes, we'll fact check.
So that this is the way it is.
If it's
still, if it's open, fine. If it's closed, then we apologize for One of us will have to apologize.
I can't up front.
Don't do that up front. We are going to take a break. When we take a break, when we come back, we are going to open up our lines. Then I'm going to go to Ikedi's main constituency, which is sports. And I will also talk a bit about the doctor's strike and some other issues. Ikedi, when he is in town, will be popping by once in a while. I like to do that for some of my old colleagues. What does it say here? It says it's officially open again. That's it.
When?
This was in January 2021, so still fact-checking whether it's been shut again.
It's been shut again, yes. And it was opened sometime this year. Okay, we'll take a short commercial break and then we'll be right back. Yeah, you welcome back to the Daily Digest with Jimmy Diso. And I have with me Ikede Ezeguzo, you know, he's a journalist. Now he just lets me know he's over 40 years in the profession and he doesn't think he's a veteran. He doesn't think he's a veteran after 40 years. But okay, Ikede, I've always known you to be a very cynical writer. That's what I like about your writings. And they're quite cynical. Of all the writings, columns that you've written, which do you think lingers in your mind as, oh, this is my best time?
I mean, there have been many, but I remember one, and that's why I'm laughing.
Yes.
I titled it The Antics of a Masquerade.
Hmm.
And that's when the debate was going on whether Babangida will leave or not leave.
That one.
Uh-huh. And then I wrote that column saying that some masquerades, when they get into the square, they listen to the drum beats and so on, and even know when to depart. But that of reason, we also have masquerades that, because of the way they are geared, they're able to produce some sounds, even by matching their feet and so on. So even if the drummers leave, that such a masquerade might insist on staying on the square, producing its own music.
Oh my God.
You might get to a point that nobody will tell the drummers to return to meet the district. So I remember that.
One of the best columns I wrote, I wrote quite one, but there was one that I wrote, I think it was published on Saturday in Vanguard, about how I wanted to vote for Jimmy Agbaje in his first outing.
Okay.
It was so every time, it's in my book. You know, I have a book dedicated to Uncle Sam Amoka.
Yes.
Yes, and it's there. And so that's one of the ones that that I like. These are the things that we live on.
Yes.
Is the memories of it. People don't understand that journalism really is a calling. It's not a lucrative in that sense. It's not a lucrative enterprise if you practice it well.
Yes.
If you don't go and bend on choppy and all these things.
When people mix up the glamour of the practice, you know, with real journalism itself, you are not a newsmaker. Though many people are thriving on what they call celebrity journalism, in which case they report themselves.
Yes.
They report those they've been with as a way of promoting themselves. You're supposed to report the news. You are not a newsmaker. The people out there are making the news. Then secondly, as poverty also grows, especially especially as there are no real programs to take care of it, people look for easy ways to survive. And journalism has proved to be one of them, including the ease of being able to travel. So they just travel and stay away. The others say they are publishing something, maybe blackmail some people, get some money.
So
those are not part of our practice. Sometimes we live mostly on memories of things that have been done. Like you were asking me if I could remember something. You remember it and it just makes you feel that...
It gives you a high.
Yeah, it gives you a high. But the moment the practice itself also starts going down the way it is going, you also feel it. You know, people call you up to ask what is going on. But just as I said, I remind them, we are in a society that has paid very minimal attention to education.
Yes.
I think university lecturers, polytechnics, and so on, they strike more than any other sector that we know. And people could go home sometimes how many months and nobody really cares. So that lack of attention to education is part of the reason for us being where we are. It has been total. You hear of agreements signed in 1996 that have not been fulfilled.
Fulfilled, yes.
Yeah, up till now. So how do you do that?
Well, talking about strikes, and I think, let me use this opportunity. There's been controversy going on about my bringing in Festus Keyamo this morning into the issue of the doctor's strike. And it is nothing against Festus. He's somebody I respect from the bottom of my heart. He's my very good abro. But we are desperate. I am desperate on behalf of my people. I want to get the hospitals up and running. And that's why I had to call on him this morning to say that, look, Festus, you are one of those who was, to say, quote unquote, one of the freedom fighters. And now that you are in the corridors of power, and thankfully now that you are in the Labour Ministry, that could you please lean on these people to find a resolution to this doctor strike? Ikedi, how does it sound to you that doctors have been strike for over a month? Resident doctors have been on strike for over a month. And the senior doctors were threatening. In the newspapers, on Tuesday or so, they said that they hadn't had any contact from government for 5 days. So I was asking this morning rhetorically, when the president wakes up every morning, if it's not in his in the agenda for the day, I'm sure he reads papers first thing in the morning. How worried is he, for example, that your resident doctors are on strike? What discussions has he been having with the Labour Minister, who ironically is a surgeon? I mean, so at that level of frustration, I just felt on behalf of my people, let me call on our man, Festus Keyamo, who is the Minister of State Labour also, to please, this is a desperate call, really, if you understand where I'm going. I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
No, it's a very basic thing. For as long as our top people are not using those hospitals, nothing will be done about them.
But that is
if,
sad.
That's what makes it sad.
Because
if the president
uses
our public hospitals, the minister uses our public hospitals, their families use those hospitals, the doctors cannot be on strike. It's the same thing with the schools. Do you understand that? We have consistently for so many years got moved until we get to a situation that our government officials do not use public services. So whether they decay, whether they fall apart, whether they shut down, they don't do anything about them. Even if their children were in the universities shut down, they can, within how many days, arrange for them to study abroad. So it is a major issue. But it also says something about how people feel that you are talking of loss of lives for the very poor people. I mean, people who cannot get attention elsewhere. They can't even afford it. Even when those services are running, they are barely managing.
Yes.
But we're not talking of somebody has an accident on the road. You don't know where to take him to. It's even worse again because of how we operate. If people have bullet wounds, they expect them to go to the general hospital to be treated or to get police report and so on. But the normal place this could be quicker should even be the general hospital.
Yes,
but those places are shut down. So what do people do? How many private hospitals do we even have? What are the capacities of those hospitals?
No, let's knock out private. I mean, private means money.
Yes, it means
money. Is non-existent.
It means money. Even the general hospitals mean money, but people can at least afford to find somewhere to go. So sometimes I read all the reasons given the minister, Chris Ngige, he does not speak as if he wants those hospitals to be open. Do you understand that? You can't go, we won't talk to you again. He even talked of employing doctors. He said we can employ doctors from elsewhere. And you know why this is on? Nigerian doctors are leaving.
Yeah.
They are leaving. So even if you open the hospitals, we don't have enough doctors to work in them. That is one.
But he is quoted to have said in a video that for our doctors to leave, we are exporting labor and that the money they earn will come back. And I said to myself, is this a clone? Is this a clone? Is somebody cloning?
Even if we are looking at that and say the money is being repatriated, that's
which
not
money?
The issue. No, no. The money they earn, whether it gets back there, that's not the issue. The issue is that our hospitals are shut, and they should quit talking and get those hospitals running. This strike is following from unfulfilled promises. As you say, there have been strikes.
Mm.
And then they will talk to the doctor, so we'll pay this, we'll do this. And they don't. You know? So, I don't...
What does it say of the attitude? One of the jobs you don't want to do in this country now is monitor the media, like I have to do every morning, flip through the papers. What does it say when there's a doctor strike and you find the same people that went around this country not only enjoying medical services abroad, enjoying it with relish, visiting each other, taking selfies? You understand? Now, one of our top political leaders is in the UK, and the place has suddenly become a mecca. The speaker will go, the governor will go, all of them, you know, take selfies. What message do we get from those things?
I want you
to assure me that I am saying...
No, it's absolute lack of shame. If someone goes abroad for medical treatment, I think it's something that the person will feel deducts from what we should be as a country. We must have top hospitals where we can. Whether it's a military hospital, whether it's a national hospital, where our people are treated. There are also security issues involved around this.
Mm.
Your leaders go abroad and people know them. They know everything about them.
Mm.
You understand that? So we're not even talking about that aspect. But for us to be so shameless, to be trooping abroad that we're on a visit to... I mean, it doesn't make... The man is there, medical vacation, whatever you call it, allow him to rest. Don't waste further public resources in going there. None of them should tell us, no, we are going there on our own. No, part of the public resources you are wasting is also time. Time for you to be here and do the work for which you were elected or appointed or something. So that time is also a public resource. And if they were, maybe like people like us, even if they made that visit, they wouldn't be showing it.
Of course, it's a complete insensitivity at the highest order.
It's insensitivity. Yes. It comes also from a poor awareness of public perception of our leaders. They think that's also one of the ways to show that they are serving the public. They are not. And more importantly, the doctors are on strike. So you would have expected that anything dealing with anyone going abroad for treatment would have been...
A bit clandestine.
Yes, it would be something you treat quietly, not a photo opportunity, you know. We are not talking of a hospital, a prime hospital being opened here now, where our leaders are treated. So people go there to visit the person, and you could be saying, well, we've now turned the corner and we can treat ourselves in our country.
Well, I mean, since the First Lady even made her remarks about the presidential clinic in Abuja, what other proof do we have? It's just that... Apart from the situation, the attitude is what affects me.
No, the attitude is worse.
It's worse.
Yeah, the doctor's strike, when government officials talk, they sound as if they're even doing us a favor to discuss it. And then with threats like, we are not meeting with you again. You know, go back to work. No work, no pay.
No,
you know, things like that. Those are not ways to negotiate. I think we still have a huge dose of what we carried over from the military. Mm. So if you're a minister, the ministry is your own fiefdom and you just run it any which way. Your word is order. There is no law anymore. Whatever you say becomes law. So I think that we are still under that type of situation.
Mm.
But it is sad because lives are being lost. We're not talking of statistics. We are talking of real lives.
Mm.
Families are affected. And as these things go on, those who should provide solution are so far away from the problem. Wow.
Okay, let's take one or two calls, okay? Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Morning, Pastor Ladigbo.
Anyway, Uncle Jimmy, I want to quickly say something about this fake news. You know, prior to this time, there have been fake news. But I think one of the things that fuel it most in our nation is the event that happened between 2014 and 2015. It was really, 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 really heavy. And ever since that time, till now, that thing has grown and has become a monster. That is why we find ourselves in this situation where we are now. Like Annalie said, if only government officials are using these hospitals, they would have been proactive. I'm telling you. Sir, go and check. In the 80s, in the 90s, government schools are thriving. People like us, we attend government schools. But today, that is what they killed that sector. And private schools took over. Now, private university has also taken over. So all these things is as a result of when people don't care. Thank you, and God bless Nigeria.
All right, Pastor. Let me take another call. Hello, good morning. Okay, let's take another one. Hello, morning. Morning. Let's take another one. Hello, good morning.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello, Uncle Jimmy.
Yes. Okay, now we knock it off. Please, when you call from a quiet background. This one there on top of Okada. It is on top of Okada. I don't know whether police it is Okada itself. It's Uncle Jimmy, Uncle Jimmy. Okay, so let's try another one. Hello,
Uncle Jimmy. Good morning, sir.
Morning, who's speaking?
May God bless you. It's Comrade Koboke Ikechukwu from Otter Farms.
Yes.
I agree, Sheriff, and that's your guest. That's your guest is a genius like you and Sheriff.
Yes.
My sister daughter is my father now as a manager, and it's like I want this daughter's life to continue. Let them get this thing once and for all. And I thank Nigerian soldiers that are bombarding the terrorists. Another one, VAT, that Lagos and the Port Harcourt is collecting. Let them continue collecting that VAT.
Okay, thank you. Let's pick another one. Hello? Hello?
Hello, good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Morning, who's calling?
My name is Biwe from Yaba.
Yes, please.
I just wanted to ask your guest. Pastor Itua said during his birthday interview that about 1,000 people are holding us ransom.
Yes. So
the people we elected as ministers, as governors, as whoever, if they're not working as citizens, isn't there something we can do to displace them?
Good.
There has to be something.
Yeah,
we can't just sit down and be looking. I have money to go to a private hospital, but my neighbor may not, and I should be concerned.
You heard what she said, Nkedi.
Well, the earlier caller mentioned something about the events in between 2014 and 2015. What this country has known since then is a lot of propaganda.
And very little action.
Yes. And then disinformation and so on and so forth.
Yes.
Government is most unwilling to treat issues because it even appears, it's not just the federal, even the states, they appear so distant from these issues. Mm. They appear so distant from these issues. And short of saying, oh, this is the hospital this person uses, even if it's in Nigeria, which should be invasion of privacy, almost everybody knows that they don't. But unfortunately, whereas the media can do as much as it can, it goes across various things. Even court orders are not obeyed.
Yes.
Even when you are reported that they are not obeyed, the judge issues another order and so on, they are still not obeyed. So what do you do beyond that? But what I'm looking at is a lot more of voter education. You know?
But
not just in the media, you know? A lot of voters education. A lot of peaceful actions also to draw attention to this. You understand that? People are making this to seem like, oh, it's doctors. You know, it's that sector. If the schools are running and the doctors are on strike, okay, it's just one strike. No. We are talking of things that involve life. And
life,
we cannot do any of those other things we want to do. So we have so many NGOs, and I think these are the times for them to activate their various platforms to draw attention to these issues. And let's see if there is a lot more of it being discussed in the public. Maybe they will remember the promises they made willingly.
You know, what hurts me in all this is that our people see these things visibly. Like we will say in Bia Paloto, go and write it down. You know, when a Nigerian wants to emphasize something, he will tell us this, you go and write it down. In 2023, you will find our people trooping to vote for these same people.
No, they're
and yes, go on.
We still live on a lot of sentiments. I've told someone that if someone is coming into office, as you're talking, you can handle security, medical, and I'm not paying school fees and so on. Why should I bother with you face the sun or the moon or where the sun rises or sets? For me, it will be nothing. because the person is providing a service.
Yes.
But you see, we've got to a point where I will support Jimmy Disu because I know him, and maybe because I know him, if he gets there, I'll get something and so on. And in spite of the disappointments people have had of voting in people on those sentiments and getting nothing, because they come back and complain, and we hear some of those complaints, they will still go that same way. You know, we are busy dividing the country more along the lines of making people enemies because they're enemies to somebody who is your friend or your enemy. You know, we are no longer looking at the survival of this country. People are discussing the future. What we are discussing, there are very basic things that don't even lead you to the future. The education we are talking about, we are not talking of the quality of the education or the quality of the teachers there, the quality of materials used, the environment. Mm. The hospitals, we are even saying open them. Some of them, if you get there, you won't believe they are hospitals. So we are not even discussing those things. We are not discussing using high-end science and technology for education and medicine, but just let those places run. Mm. Yet we are stuck with these basic things because people who should do their work, they don't. They are busy flying everywhere, going to conferences that do not mean anything. For them, if they attend the conference, that's an achievement on its own. The issue ends there. You know, whatever was learned from that conference is not put back into the things we do because we don't even have systems that can support those things. You know, so we need to have people thinking about the future of Nigeria.
Ikedi, you're from the East, and I wanted to
ask... the Southeast.
Southeast, sorry. My apologies. You know, I'm old school.
No, before you, you say the East, it could be Middle East, Far East,
Far
or
East.
Near East.
No, you know, this brain...
Okay, you meant Eastern region,
Eastern region.
No longer exists.
Which no longer exists.
Yes.
And there's been a lot of talk about marginalization of that area. So I'd like to know your views on that. And very quickly, in just 5 minutes...
I don't call it marginalization.
What do you call
again,
it?
We need our space. We need freedom. And by that freedom, I mean, if I wanted to establish a seaport in the East, I should be able to do that.
Yes.
If I want to move my goods from wherever, I should. But you cannot move every half a kilometer, there is a checkpoint. Every half a kilometer. And that doesn't apply to the areas where we have conflict. If you go to the Northwest or Northeast, we don't have those type of checkpoints. Every half a kilometer, you see soldiers, you see police, you see all sorts of people. And now, why we are talking of space, it also involves what they do with young people. If you're a young person in the East, you are just seen as a terrorist and treated as such.
That's
it. Doesn't matter where you are from, where you are going to, how you are dressed or so on. It doesn't happen elsewhere. You know? But what people forget is that it's not only people from the East who live in the Southeast. So other people too, either pass there and so on and go through this.
Go to the same.
But they see it as momentary. But we're talking of our villages. We have checkpoints inside the villages. We are talking of situations where we have a lot of indiscipline because people can lean on security forces and decide what to do, particularly those who collect money for them. You know, they have young people employed on the road who collect this money for them. So they form alliances, and those ones are out of anybody's control. You know, but while all this is going on, the normal crimes that you have on the roads are still there. So we do not understand the purpose of that. It doesn't stop herdsmen from getting in. It doesn't stop armed robbery. It doesn't stop kidnapping. But the targeting of a particular part of the country and you put that level of security there is part of that marginalization. That's one. Secondly, if you look at the industrial map of Nigeria, including the gas master plan, the Southeast is not there.
Wow.
It's excluded. No. It's policy. You know, if we go back to 1970, since 1970, so many things have been done to exclude the Southeast.
The Southeast.
Including designing of boundaries for oil wells to get into certain parts and other states. Do you understand that? But those are not even, we are saying, okay, you've done that much, but allow us to be able to live in our own space peacefully. Sometimes you just see vehicles, army vehicles passing everywhere, and you would think there is still a war.
Army of occupation.
And some of these young people are not as patient as the generations before them. Many of them are educated. You can't get jobs. You cannot. And if you try to start any small business and you're a bit well off and so on, anything could just happen to you. You're on the road, something could happen to you. So we need that place to be cleared up. There is a security siege.
Okay, Ikedi, you're going to do me a favor tomorrow. Can we take you up for 15 minutes by phone? You don't have to come here.
Okay.
Can we do that? If not,
okay.
We do it next week?
No, next week cannot.
Yeah, not okay. So that we can finish.
Let's see how it goes.
Because I have to get out of here within the next 1 minute.
Yeah, no, there's no problem.
So we can take 15 minutes between 9 and 9:15 tomorrow.
Okay.
It's a deal.
Okay. No problem.
Okay. Chop knuckle. All right. Ikedi and I will be back tomorrow to conclude. Okay, we'll take about 15 minutes or thereabout. But the next time he's in Lagos, I must capture him. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'll take up the mail. I'll have 15 minutes with EKD, and then hopefully Arun Balogun will be providing spouses for our Muslim brothers and sisters. EKD Izuguzo, thank you very much for coming. And Zainab,
thank you. Pleasure,
Ismail. Thanks. I'll see you all tomorrow at 9. Bye.
Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Nigeria Info FM. Check us out on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3. Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos for live updates as it happens. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.